Hello, and welcome to our program, Seniorific News, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Patty Martin, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from Seniorific News, March 2023, here on OWL Radio. Our first article is Questions to Ask About Where to Live. From the National Association of Area Agencies on Aging, the American Bar Association, and AARP. One of the most important decisions older adults make is their choice of housing. Their future contentment, comfort, and even safety may depend on careful consideration of all the housing options available to them. Fortunately, an array of housing options and living arrangements can meet the needs of those who are aging. Understanding what the options are and the needs they fill is the first step in making a wise choice. Many will want to stay in a cherished home for as long as possible, but will make some changes to make it safer and more comfortable. Others will seek a group setting where companionship and planned activities fill the day, or where in-home support services may be easier to obtain. Housing appropriate for one older adult may be completely unacceptable for another. An older person who needs assistance may require a different type of housing than one who can live independently. What's most important is matching as closely as possible housing and living arrangements with an older person's needs and desires. Asking the right questions can help determine the right answers. Here are some questions to consider. Questions to ask about home ownership. Is remaining at home a short-term or a long-term plan? If I remain at home, how will my social, health, and financial needs be met? Do I have equity in my home? If so, what are ways to obtain a loan and use it? Is house sharing an option to consider? Am I eligible for any home repair programs that are completed by volunteers? Are there programs available to help me pay for the cost of home repairs, home modifications, home heating expenses, weatherization, utility bills, and other expenses of maintaining a home? Would modifying my home permit me to continue living there? If so, how do I find a qualified remodeler? Is the remodeler I am considering a certified aging in place specialist? Are there volunteers from my local area agency on aging who can help me? What universally designed products and features should I consider to make my home safer and more comfortable? Am I eligible for any property tax relief programs in my state? Am I eligible for any in-home support services through federal, state, or local programs such as Medicare or Medicaid? Can I use my long-term care insurance policy to pay for in-home support services? Questions to ask about rental housing. If I anticipate the need to make physical changes to the unit to make it more accessible, who is responsible for the cost of the modifications? Are pets allowed, and if not, would it be possible to have a pet if I pay a pet deposit? If a pet deposit policy is in place, is it refundable if there's no damage when I move out? Can the landlord object or ask me to move if I receive in-home support services? Am I eligible for any in-home support services through federal, state, or local programs? Can I use my long-term care insurance policy to pay for in-home support services? Am I eligible for any state or federal rent subsidy programs? Am I eligible for any state rent rebate programs? Questions to ask about group housing. What is the basic monthly rate and what in-home support services are included in that rate? How many hours of service are included? Can I save hours that I do not use during a day or week for a later time when I do need them? Is there an entrance fee? Is it refundable? Is there a waiting list? Am I eligible for any in-home support services through federal, state, or local programs? Can I use my long-term care insurance policy to pay for in-home support services? Can I purchase additional services? If so, what types of services and how many hours a day or week are they available? What would those additional costs be, and how would I be billed? What happens if my needs change or increase? Would I be asked to sign an admissions agreement or a contract before I move in? Are there resources available to help me understand the contract? Are my utilities included? How will I be assigned a room? Can I bring my own furnishings? Can I have a pet? Will the facility honor my special food and dietary preferences? Can I have guests in my unit? What is the provider's background and experience? Is the provider financially sound? What are the professional qualifications for staff, and how many people does each staff person serve? What are the training requirements for the facility administrator and for the staff? Is the facility close to shopping, senior centers, religious facilities, medical facilities, and other amenities that are important to me? Do rooms have a telephone and television? How is billing for those handled? Does the facility have safety features? Does it have a disaster relief plan? What happens if the facility asks me to leave? Have I received a copy of the facility statement of resident rights? Is there a resident council? Can I participate in facility management and decision making? Your local area agency on aging can help with some questions. Just call 211 to reach them. The next article is titled Changes Once COVID-19 Emergency Ends. The declaration of a COVID-19 public health emergency 3 years ago changed the lives of millions of Americans by offering increased health care coverage, beefed up food assistance, and universal access to coronavirus vaccines and tests. Much of that is now coming to an end, with Biden's administration saying it plans to end the emergency declarations on May 11th. Here's a look at what will stay and what will go once the emergency order is lifted. Tests, treatments, vaccines. The at-home nasal swabs, COVID-19 vaccines, as well as their accompanying boosters, treatments, and other products that scientists have developed over the last 3 years will still be authorized for emergency use by the Food and Drug Administration once the public health emergency is over. But how much people pay for certain COVID-19 related products may change. Insurers will no longer be required to cover the cost of free at-home COVID-19 tests. Free vaccines, however, won't come to an end with the public health emergency. There's no one right now who cannot get a free vaccine or booster, says Cynthia Cox, vice president at Kaiser Family Foundation. Right now, all the vaccines that are being administered are still the ones purchased by the federal government. But the Biden administration has said it's running out of money to buy up vaccines, and Congress has not budged on the president's request for more funding. Many states expect they can make it through the spring and summer, but there are questions around what their vaccine supply will look like going into the fall, when respiratory illness typically start to spike. Medicaid enrollment ballooned during the pandemic, in part because the federal government prohibited states from removing people from the program during the public health emergency once they had enrolled. The program offers health care coverage to roughly 90 million children and adults, or one out of every four Americans. Late last year, Congress told states they could start removing ineligible people in April. Millions of people are expected to lose their coverage either because they now make too much money to qualify for Medicare, or they've moved. Many are expected to be eligible for low-cost insurance plans through the Affordable Care Act's private marketplace or their employer. Student loans. Payments on federal student loans were halted in March 2020 under the Trump administration and have been on hold since. The Biden administration announced a plan to forgive up to $10,000 in federal student loan debts for individuals with incomes of less than $125,000 or households with incomes under $250,000. But that forgiveness plan, which more than 26 million people have applied for, is on pause, thrown into legal limbo while awaiting a ruling from the Supreme Court. The pause on student loan payments is expected to end 60 days after the Supreme Court ruling. Telehealth. COVID-19's arrival rapidly accelerated the use of telehealth, with many providers and hospital systems shifting their delivery of care to a smartphone or computer format. Congress has already agreed to extend many of those telehealth flexibilities for Medicare through the end of next year. Food assistance. Relaxed rules during the COVID-19 public health emergency made it easier for individuals and families to receive a boost in benefits under the Federal Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. Some state and congressional action has started to wind down some of that. Emergency allotments, typically about $82 a month, according to the Food Research and Action Center, will come to an end as soon as March in more than two dozen states. Money for hospitals. Hospitals will take a big financial hit in May when the emergency comes to an end. They'll no longer get an extra 20% for treating COVID-19 patients who are on Medicare. The end to those payments comes at a time when many hospitals are under financial pressure, struggling with workforce shortages, and dealing with the pain of inflation, said Stacy Hughes, the executive vice president at the American Hospitals Association. Our next article is titled Getting Financial Help as a Family Caregiver from SavvySenior.org. Question. I have been taking care of my elderly father for over a year, and it's taking a toll on my finances because I can only work part-time. Are there any resources you know about that can help family caregivers get paid? Caring for an elder parent can be challenging in many ways, but it can be especially difficult financially if you have to miss work to provide care. Fortunately, there are a number of government programs and other tips that may be able to help you monetarily while you care for your dad. Here are some options to explore. Veterans benefits. If your dad is a military veteran, there are several different VA programs he may be eligible for that provide financial assistance to family caregivers, including veteran-directed care. Available in most states, this program provides a needs-based monthly budget for long-term care services. va.gov/geriatrics/pages/veteran-directed_care.asp. Aid in attendance or housebound benefits. These programs provide a monthly payment to veterans and survivors who receive a VA pension and who either need assistance with activities of daily living, i.e. bathing, dressing, going to the bathroom, or are housebound. va.gov/pension/aid-attendance-housebound. Program of Comprehensive Assistance for Family Caregivers. This provides a monthly stipend to family members who serve as caregivers for veterans who need assistance with daily living activities because of an injury or illness sustained in the line of duty. caregiver.va.gov/support/support_benefits.asp. Other options. If your dad has some savings or other assets, discuss the possibility of him paying you for the care you provide, or talk to your siblings to see if they can chip in. If they agree, consider drafting a short written contract that details the terms of your work and payment arrangements so everyone involved knows what to expect. A contract will also help avoid potential problems should your dad ever need to apply for Medicaid for nursing home care. Also, check to see if your dad has any long-term care insurance that covers in-home care. If he does, in some cases, those benefits may be used to pay you. Tax breaks. There are also tax credits and deductions you may be eligible for as your dad's caregiver that can help. For example, if your dad lives with you and you're paying at least half of his living expenses and his gross income was less than $4,400 in 2022, not counting his Social Security, you can claim him as a dependent on your taxes and get a $500 tax credit. If you can't claim him as a dependent, you may still be able to get a tax deduction if you're paying more than half his living expenses, including medical and long-term care costs, and they exceed 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. You can include your own medical expenses in calculating the total. To see which medical expenses you can deduct, see IRS Publication 502 at irs.gov/pub/irs-pdf/p502.pdf. Or if you're paying for in-home care or adult daycare for your dad so you can work, you might qualify for the dependent care tax credit, which can be worth as much as $1,050. To claim this credit, you'll need to fill out IRS Form 2441. irs.gov/pub/irs-pdf/f2441.pdf when you file your federal return. Medicaid assistance. All 50 states in the District of Columbia offer self-directed Medicaid services for long-term care. These programs let states grant waivers that allow income-qualified individuals to manage their own long-term home care services. In some states, that can include hiring a family member to provide care. Benefits, coverage, eligibility, and rules differ from state to state. Program names also vary. What's called consumer-directed care in one state may be called participant-directed services, in-home support services, or cash and counseling in another. Contact your state Medicaid program to ask about its options or to start the sign-up process. The next article is titled Blood Clots Explained, from the National Institutes of Health. Your blood is an amazing multi-purpose substance. It flows continuously through the body, carrying oxygen and nutrients to your cells. But if you get a scrape or cut, some of this flowing liquid quickly turns to a protective clot. Clots are tangles of molecules in blood cells that clump together. They help prevent blood loss when the skin breaks open. They also help stop infections from getting inside the body. But when clotting happens inside a blood vessel, it can be dangerous. Clots can form on the blood vessel walls to help them heal if they get damaged. Afterward, the clots usually dissolve, but sometimes a clot doesn't get broken down as it's supposed to. Clots may also form when they're not needed. Sometimes clots break off a vessel wall and travel through the blood to other parts of the body. They may cause a lot of damage depending on where they block blood flow. Blood clots can potentially harm the brain, heart, lungs, or other organs. But researchers have made great progress over the last few decades in managing blood clots. They continue to develop new ways to treat and prevent such blockages. Clogs in the system. Three main things that can lead to dangerous blood clots, explains Dr. Mitchell Elkind, an expert on stroke at Columbia University. One is an abnormality in the blood that makes it more likely to clot. The second is when blood doesn't flow properly. This can be a side effect of diseases and disorders of the heart or blood vessels. The third is damage to the lining of blood vessels. One cause of such damage is cholesterol buildup in the blood. Blood clots can happen to anyone at any age, but some people are at an increased risk. These include older adults and those with certain heart conditions. Major surgery or a serious injury also add risk. Obesity, being physically inactive, and some medications can boost the chance of a dangerous clot too. And once you've had one blood clot, you're at high risk of another one, notes Dr. Nigel Key, an expert on blood disorders at the University of North Carolina. Some infections may also increase the risk of blood clotting. Recent studies have shown that the virus that causes COVID-19, SARS-CoV-2, can cause blood clots in some people. Symptoms of a clot. Blood clots can occur anywhere in the body. That makes it difficult to find them before they cause a problem, Elkind explains. The symptoms of a blood clot depend on where they are. A clot blocking blood flow to the brain can lead to a stroke. Strokes can cause sudden difficulty seeing, speaking, or walking. They can also make you feel weak, numb, dizzy, or confused. A clot that blocks blood flow to the heart can cause a heart attack. The most common signs are crushing chest pain and difficulty breathing. Others range from cold sweats to arm or shoulder pain. A clot in the lungs can cause shortness of breath, pain when breathing deeply, or even coughing up blood. A clot in a vein deep within the body is called a deep vein thrombosis or DVT. Symptoms include swelling, pain, warmth, or red or discolored skin. Long periods of inactivity can increase your risk. Compared with a heart attack or stroke, there's low awareness of the symptoms of deep vein thrombosis, Key says. Many symptoms overlap with less dangerous conditions, such as a blood spasm. Such as a muscle sprain. If you have symptoms of a blood clot, call your health care provider or 911 immediately. You may need to go to the hospital to have blood or imaging tests. Busting blockages. Treatment depends on where a clot is and how long you've had symptoms. Certain drugs can break up and dissolve some types of clots, but they have to be given within a few hours of when symptoms start. A type of surgery called a thrombectomy can be used to remove clots in large blood vessels. It can be used even if people don't get to the hospital in time to receive clot busting drugs. That's been a huge benefit for patients, says Dr. Waleed Brinjikji, an expert on stroke at the Mayo Clinic. Stopping a clot. If you have a clot that's forming, certain medications may help shrink it or stop it from growing. These drugs are called anticoagulants. They're more commonly known as blood thinners. Sometimes people with certain heart conditions are given blood thinners to prevent blood clots from forming, but blood thinners can have side effects, including an increased risk of bleeding. So doctors don't give them to everyone. Our last article, Healthy Eating for Healthy Hearts, by Chelsea Couch, Texas Department of Health and Human Services. According to America's health rankings, only 8.4% of Texans aged 65 and older met the recommended intake for fruits and vegetables. Eating a well-balanced diet is possible on any budget and can impact overall health and lower risk for chronic conditions, including heart disease. Nutrition is an important part of heart health. Eating a healthy diet can lower cholesterol, lower blood pressure, and help maintain a healthy weight. The American Heart Association recommends a diet with a wide variety of fruits and vegetables, healthy sources of protein, minimally processed foods, and minimal salt and sugar intake. To make shopping for heart-healthy foods easier, look for the heart checkmark, red heart with white checkmark, on food items. This represents the food has been certified by the American Heart Association as heart-healthy. Visit the U.S. Department of Agriculture's MyPlate website, myplate.gov, for more healthy eating recommendations for healthy aging. The Texas Health and Human Services Texercise Initiative has a variety of free resources that engage older Texans in healthy lifestyle behaviors, including healthy eating habits. Texercise provides a selection of nutrition fact sheets highlighting topics such as sodium reduction, portion sizes, and healthy cooking tips. Use the Aging Well Resources order form and search Texercise using the Select a Program drop-down menu to download Texercise nutrition facts. Texercise also offers communities and organizations with Texercise Nourish, a free 12-week nutrition education program that brings groups together to learn about and engage in healthy eating for healthy aging. Texercise Nourish can be held anywhere adults meet, including senior and community centers, congregate meal sites, food banks, and pantries, worksites, faith-based organizations, and long-term care facilities. Other preventative behaviors that can help with keeping your heart healthy include engaging in regular physical activity, quitting and avoiding tobacco products, practicing stress reduction strategies, getting adequate sleep, getting regular checkups with your primary care provider. You have been listening to Seniorific News on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Patty Martin saying goodbye from Owl Radio.